Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this week, we've got Tony Mariotti over in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, back on the show. We always enjoy the opportunities to talk to Tony. We've had him on before. We're talking panfish. Tony's a multi-species guy, but he's definitely a panfish guru over there in that heart of lakes part of the world, Ottertail County, Becker County, Minnesota. You know, just so many lakes over there, such... just a variety of fishing opportunities over there that it just cannot be overstated. And Tony is definitely a product of his environment. He's a very nuanced fisherman because he is the type of guy that gets out and samples all these fishing opportunities, and he's really experienced so many different bites, even just in his home area. We're going to talk all about it in this show after we get caught up on some of the things he's been doing. We're going to talk about, some things that Tony's anticipating, but we're going to spend a lot of time just figuring out how to break down all kinds of bites throughout the ice season for big crappies and big bluegills with Tony Mariotti on this week's JMO Podcast. And if you're looking for an opportunity to support the show, head over to jasonmitchelloutdoors.com, click on the apparel tab, check out some of the cool merch we got going on over there, and wherever you're getting the show, wherever you're getting the podcast, whether on YouTube or any of the podcast apps, if you like it, make sure you comment. Get recommendations for topics or upcoming shows, a guest for upcoming shows, of course. And any opportunity that you see fit to share it with any of your fishing friends, we really appreciate it. We really appreciate the support. And thank you so much for those of you that have been continuing to listen to the show. Now let's get into this interview with Tony Mariotti. We're talking panfish through the ice. Tony, been a minute since we talked. What's the update, man? Have you been out sampling some ice? I mean, have you wet a line? Like, what's kind of the update of the season for you right now?
You know, right now in the Detroit Lakes area, Ottertail County area, there's a lot of variability. We've got some lakes that are definitely fishable with even 8-9 inches of ice, and we have some of the bigger lakes, Cormorant, and some of the bigger lakes that have just kind of capped over, and we're sitting with just an inch or two of ice on the majority of the lake.
Yeah, I mean, is that pretty standard for you? Is this, that's kind of another question too, is like, is the vibe out there just a pretty normal early ice season here? We're all just kind of, or is there a few things that you think guys should be heads up on?
No, it's turning out to be pretty typical. You know, we had some wind early on that kind of kept some areas a little bit thinner ice. But for the most part, it's a real typical year. You know, we didn't have the early ice like we did last year, but for the most part, the snow has been staying at bay. Some areas did get, 6-7 inches the other day, but it didn't really seem to affect the ice. And we're still not making a ton of ice. We haven't gotten real cold. I think it's going to be a couple of more weeks before we get to that point. But we definitely have some safe fishable ice, and the fish are cooperating in this area.
Yeah, man. And I've been, sneaking around on social media. I've seen a couple of, some tasty little Instagram posts there. Talk a little bit about wetting a line so far this year.
Well, this time of year, we spend a lot of times, as kind of working the sports shows and talking a lot of fishing, but the urge was a little too great. So I did manage to sneak away the last few days, and I made the trek up to Red Lake. And, Red Lake is one of those typical or probably the most prominent early ice walleye spot in the state of Minnesota. It's a lake that's fairly shallow, pretty consistent, fairly predictable. And I managed to get up there and scratch that itch with the early season walleyes. And it was an absolute blast.
Yeah, man. I mean, how is that for you? Like, seeing that first mark on the Vexlar and or just getting that first bite. I mean, talk about that, man. I mean, the passion never leaves a guy, right?
For sure. And what's funny is that first bite, I didn't even see the mark on my Vexlar. The typical, it's very typical on Red Lake that these fish basically are roaming that giant basin. There's very little structure. And we went out, there's a ton of resorts. Like, we went out of Mort's Dock on the south end of the lake, and we literally drove out past the crowd. The key up there is really to try to get away from people. So there's a lot of people because it is very popular and predictable. So we went out, we got about 300 yards past the last guys, and we set up with, about 12 inches of ice, And my first mark, I dropped a ribbon leech flutter spoon down, and I was working it back and forth. And we were kind of talking about how a lot of times there's a dead stick bite on Red Lake, and that it seems like these fish just roam. And when they see a little morsel of food, they just come in and smack it. And as I'm watching the spoon fall, all of a sudden I saw nothing and boom, fish on. And that never gets old. It was so typical. You know, as the couple of days went, we got to the point where we were marking a lot of fish before they bit. But that first whack is something that every angler absolutely loves.
Oh, man. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like the deal. I remember like a couple of years ago, like my first trip out, I was on Devils, right? I go up, you know, meet up with Jason. We're going to do some kind of an early ice project. And I snuck out for an evening bite. And I remember I was like, I had all this like this funny like pressure on myself. Like I was 10 years old that I needed to catch a fish so bad. And I caught the first mark that showed up on my Vexilar that year. And I remember feeling so like accomplished. And I just remember feeling like a kid, like I caught the first one. I caught the first one. You know, and it was just like this a big deal to me. And nobody was around to see it. So, you know, I mean, I guess. But yeah, man, those early ice feelings, man, it's that's just good stuff, man. It's just how we do what we do. But that being said, you know, it's early ice. So, I mean, what are some of the trendy topics in your mind? I mean, what are some of the things that are super on the forefront of your mind that you're looking forward to this year? Is it, you know, some fish patterns that you're thinking about breaking down? Do you got some new gear that's just, you know, you're chomping at the bit to get out there and get on? I mean, what are some of the exciting things that are just kind of on your mind that you just can't wait to attack this year?
You know, I think every year, and some of it has gotten a little bit less as I've gotten older, and you get kids active in activities, and it's kind of go, go, go. But probably the favorite part for me is exploring new bodies of water. You know, I get asked all the time about, you know, where did you catch those fish, or are you on some really good fish? And, you know, I saw some pictures, and truthfully, it you know, I'm fortunate to live in an area that has so many great lakes to choose from. And I learned, you know, 15 years ago that it's very easy to get spotitis, where I know I can go to this lake and catch fish right here. And I think sometimes as an angler, you're not doing yourself any favors by always sticking with what you know. There may be times when I just want to feel the old hook set and I'm going to go back to old reliable. But probably the thing that I'm looking the most forward to is to explore some new bodies of water. You know, I've kind of throughout the summer, I spend a lot of time looking at lakes and looking at lake maps and, you know, just getting that, hey, that one's always intrigued me. And actually taking a day and just venturing out. Sometimes it's a hike. Sometimes it's you know, a lake that's maybe right off the road that people just overlook. But I think going out and exploring those lakes and, you know, maybe striking out 90% of the time, but every now and again, when you get that 10% that you get a little hidden gem, I feel there's such an amount of accomplishment that you get that feeling of, look at what I found. And a lot of times I might only fish that lake once or twice. I know that they're here. And then when Jason calls and wants to do a show, we can go back. Or when we need some nice fish for pictures, we'll go back there and get our pictures and then off to the next, you know, let's see what we can conquer next.
Man, you're so right on that. Like I that's kind of been a learned behavior for me as well, getting exposed to the industry, you know, and spending time on Jason's crew where, you know, he kind of exposes me to, you know, that style of fishing, that level of fishing, that just being a fish finder. And the real like takeaway so often is just like trying something new, never going back to the exact same spot to do something. Like there's just something into that. Is you feel like you were born that way, or like at what point in time, what experience level did you have when you just started to cherish that part of the hunt more so than just going back to, you know, having spotitis?
You know, in all honesty, I think a lot of it was about the time that I started spending time, you know, doing some filming with Jason, because he knew that, you know, hey, I want a spot that I can get some, you know, big panfish. And so it became kind of, you know, the first few shows we did, I said, you know, well, I know we can go here and catch fish. We're going to get our 10, 11 inch crappies, and we're going to get our 9-inch gills, and it's going to make for a great show. But one of the things in talking to him, he's got a great quote. And, as you know, there's a lot of Mitchellisms.
Oh, but, so many. Oh my gosh.
His the highs will be high and the lows will be low.
Oh yeah.
And it's so true, because a lot of times, you know, you might try a lake and it didn't work out, or maybe you caught, you know, 10 inch crappies and 8 inch gills, whatever. But when you find that little hidden gem, or you stumble on something that other people have overlooked, all of a sudden that high is a totally different high. And when we started filming shows, you know, I think my first show I did with Jason was probably in about 2006 is when I got
there.
Married.
There you go.
And so, you know, that those first years in just exploring, and it was like, okay, well, now I know this lake holds big fish and I don't need to come back here, because all that that's going to do is draw attention to it. Or, you know, I've had a situation where I fished a lake 3 or 4 nights in a row that nobody had ever fished, and all of a sudden the landowner comes down and says, you know, what are you doing out there? I've seen you there 4 nights in a row, and I know you're not out here if you're not catching.
Yeah.
And so I've learned that it's important to just keep those little secrets to yourself, and maybe you come back when you need them, and then get out on the next adventure. And so Jason really pushed that, or kind of, you know, I saw that success had worked well for him. And, you know, I kind of took that note and I started going out and doing exactly that.
Yeah, man, there's so much in that mindset, and it's like everybody's own self-awareness is interesting, but it's so cool to just like hear you describe that for yourself. And then you, like you say, you live in an area, you're fortunate that, you know, you have other options or opportunities. You know, somebody listening to this might be from somewhere where, you know, there's kind of a prominent place to fish, and you know, maybe the next place over is a little too far away. But you know what? You can be exploratory on the same lake and just trying a new different thing. You know, if you've never fished a certain bay, you know, on a bigger body of water, or if you're fishing a river system and you're just, there's a type of pattern that you haven't tried to figure out, man, that is just, those are just the coolest goals I think to have leading into a season, and have that drive to go bore holes, you know, somewhere. And once you've accomplished something cool out there, just be ready for the next thing, man. That's gonna keep you at the tip of the spear. That's another Mitchellism, you know, being at the tip of the spear.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, Taylor, I got a call here last week. Some kids were coming up from the cities. They were going to do some filming, and they said, hey, could you point us in the right direction? And so, you know, I grew up in Otter Tail County. I currently live in Becker County, and I pointed them to some lakes that I said, you know, if you want some quality content, you should be able to get them here and there. And so off they went. And then they got into some beautiful fish, and they called me and said, hey, you know, hey man, we're on them. You want to come down and join us? And I truthfully said, geez, you know, I don't know. It's 45 minutes away. And they laughed and said, well, we just drove up 3.5 hours to get here, you know, come and do this. And I said, well, I know that there's fish there. I know those lakes. I used to fish them all the time. And do you realize I've got to pass 400 lakes literally to get from my house in Detroit Lakes down to the area that you're fishing? And it almost is a drawback at times, because sure, I mean, I enjoy the camaraderie. I would have liked to get down, but it's the same thing that, you know, your friend Jason Durham and I have talked about. He lives in Park Rapids. I live in Detroit Lakes. And we always say, why aren't we fishing together more? And we both laugh, because there are so many good lakes that we have to pass to get to each other that we end up, you know, talking on the phone and comparing notes. Yet it's that desire to search and find those new bodies of water that keep us from jumping maybe on a real easy bite at times.
Yeah. Where, yeah. Because the driving motivation, this isn't necessarily to go experience something I already experienced, right? Like I put you guys on that. That was like a favor to you. That's cool. That's cool camaraderie right there. Right. Like when you found those fish years ago, you probably, you didn't know that you were going to build a relationship with somebody 5 years later. And then a couple years after that, they were going to be calling you for some advice somewhere. And then boom, you pop in and got those fish. You know, it's kind of like the whole lifestyle. You know, I mean, that's really what we're talking about, is like, how does the fishing lifestyle really apply itself in your life? And yeah, man, I think that's it, man. Keeping that hunting mentality and staying on it. Do you have any, you know, you said you traveled up to Red Lake. I mean, for the year, do you have any trips planned, or do you stay pretty close to home all the time?
Well, I definitely would like to get out to Devil's Lake again. I always have a fun time out there. I don't have anything really big. I'm still kind of working on a Cascade trip. You know, kids right now are my life in the winter. So I stick pretty close to home and try to get out, you know, and try some new lakes here.
Yeah.
And so nothing big planned for now, but, I guarantee, you'll see me on the ice and you'll see me, I'll get some pictures up and, I'll be catching some fish this winter.
Heck yeah, man. And, I mean, it's as good a time as any to transition into some of this fishing, man. I mean, for you, when you get down and dirty, when you're putting your strategy together, you know, when you're breaking down new water, because obviously we already talked about it, a lot of your season, your goals are spent on new water or on new ice. You're checking out a new spot, a new pattern, a new lake, whatever it is. When you're breaking it down, I mean, the fish patterns, if we're going to talk panfish, because you're kind of a panfish guru. I know you're a multi-species guy, but let's stick to panfish because it's that's our wheelhouse right here, especially in, like you said, that Becker County, that Ottertail County area. We've talked about it before, but I mean, we get this question all the time. I'm sure you get this question all the time, you know, on the basin bites, you know, the basin panfish bites. I mean, is there an X out there that you can find? Is there enough holes that can be drilled to find an X on these basin bites? Or, you know, kind of what's your strategy if you got to break down a basin bite day in and day out? I mean, are you searching new spots every time? Like, what's your real, like, breakdown philosophy on basin panfish bites?
Basin panfish bites to me typically aren't where I'm going to start my season. That's more of a, you know, mid-January is when I feel that those fish start pushing out more to the basins, both mainly the crappies, but even later in the year as the bluegills move deeper. But basin bites are one of the challenges at times that a lot of times in the daytime, I'll literally look at a lake map. I'll usually look at overhead satellite because you can see where there's deeper breaks or, you know, where maybe the bowl is what I consider the basin, where that bowl is going to be. And during the daytime, yep, it's about grinding out at times and drilling a bunch of holes. That's where, you know, using something like Panoptics or Live Target or whatever it is can really help. But as simple as just swinging your Vexilar transducer underneath the ice can also give you a sense that, you know, hey, there was a little flicker over there. Maybe that's where I'm going to go next and drill a hole that way. And finding those basin fish, I feel as though come evening, I almost think you're better off hunkering down and let those fish roam to you. Because if you're chasing them, you know, it seems like I just have that kind of luck. It's like all zig and they zag. Where if they're constantly on the move, once you've kind of, you know, maybe put in a little bit of effort, hopped around, found the fish, now it's time to hunker down and let those fish just kind of move to you. And I find that that's a successful way of, you know, you might not be on fish constantly, but it allows those fish to kind of regenerate and regroup under you every 15, 20 minutes. And, oh, here they come again. And you might pluck off 2, 3, 4 fish, and then they're gone. Then 15, 20 minutes later, they're back. And I think a lot of times that way it's almost more effective than trying to chase them down.
I mean, for you, like at a start, for a starting point, if you're on a new body of water, do you just go find the basin and start drilling it out on a basin bite? Or like you said, I mean, if you spend a lot of this early ice time kind of, you know, on some weed fish or, you know, in some shallower fish. I mean, do you try to find that structure first? Cause you feel like that's maybe point A and then you follow them into the basin. Like, do you have like a way of breaking that down at all whatsoever?
For sure. You know, I think that I basically classify lakes in two simple terms. I've got my basin lakes and I've got my weed lakes. And I know that doesn't sound very scientific or, there's not much of a rationale behind it other than when I look at a lake, I almost will always start with the satellite imagery and, you know, the lake map itself, if there is one. A lot of these lakes don't even have maps made for them. That's where the satellite imagery really pays off and helps. But I can look at a lake and I can tell, okay, this is going to be a lake that has a lot of points, a lot of breaks, a lot of structure. Maybe there's even a lot of houses on the lake. And typically those lakes are going to be what I consider weed lakes. The basin lakes or a basin bite is something that has a distinct deeper hole. And I'm not talking just, you know, a small hole. I want to see a large area that maybe this lake is typically you know, 18 feet and under, and now we've got a 34-foot hole that runs 100 yards by 100 yards. Then that's that basin bite where I'm going to go out and really try to work. You know, I'll start on the edges of that basin, and I'll try to work out to the middle. And sometimes just putting in time drilling holes across a basin will allow you to find those fish. Whereas in a weed lake, like I call them, you know, those fish seem to relate to the structure, to the points, to the humps, and to the weeds much more so than sliding out over those smaller deep holes.
Do you feel like there's like a certain level of consistency or replication in a basin bite? Because I feel like, you know, there, people's opinions on basin bite, it's pretty tried and true. I mean, there's a lot of transferable information from lake to lake, but on the weed bites, you know, it feels like there can be some variability for you, some of your favorite structure, some of your favorite weed bites. I mean, what are some of the cool little nuances that have helped you be successful, breaking those down on those lakes for you?
Plain and simple, open water fishing has helped me tenfold in what I do during the winter. Peeking over the side of a boat and being able to actually see stands of cabbage weeds or coontail, or know where the pencil reed line ends and there's going to be mud, you know, on the edge of that weed line. Things like that. I spend a lot of time, I actually use my underwater camera probably more in the summer than I do in the winter, just trying to find those areas of transition, finding those areas that are going to have the bigger stands of weeds. You know, sometimes you can have a cabbage patch that runs 100 yards, you know, long in a lake, and those fish aren't always going to be in the same place, but they're going to be in those weeds. And so by taking the time in the summer, whether it's on the pontoon or on a jet ski or in the fishing boat, kind of just seeing where those weed lines actually are and fishing them and finding fish there in the summer, allows you to have confidence that you're going to be able to get back, find those exact same weed lines, find those exact same underwater points that you've already located, and the fish are going to be somewhere along there. And that's where the chess match begins.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like finding that productive water is just like so much, such a big portion of the battle. Do you ever like, you know, using your underwater camera or anything, do you ever like fully feel like you've like fully identified why something is productive, like a food source, or, you know, why the bigger fish are over here versus over there? Or is that a pretty much a moving target? Like, do you ever have any like opinions about that you'd share?
Yeah, you know, it's something that, I mean, if you could find the answer to that question, you would be a wealthy, wealthy man. But I found a place that was on a real popular lake in Becker County that has a great night bite. It's kind of known as the crappie hole. And people come out at, you know, 5 o'clock at night, and they move out into the basin in 19 feet of water, and they catch these fish starting at dark. And the crappies don't move there till dark for whatever reason. They're there after dark, and then, you know, they might fish, there might be fish there till 11, 12 at night, and then they're gone. Well, I started poking around with a camera, and I found these fish were relating to a big cabbage patch in 11 feet of water, well, 11 to 14 feet. And I started trying to figure out why they were there. And what I ended up figuring out is that there was a goofy current stream that ran from an inlet to an outlet, and it seemed like when that current was pushing, you know, along that weed edge, those fish were in there. I don't know if the water just had more oxygen levels, but I got up there and I would giggle as I was catching fish all winter, all day long, all by myself. And then at 5 o'clock, when the people would start to show up for the crappie bite, I would just pack up my stuff and leave, let them enjoy the crappie bite out at night in their permanent shacks. And I could come right back and do it again the next day in the weeds all day long. And there's something special about that spot. And that's what I've kind of come to, is I think it has something to do with how the current moves through there.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul. running on the power of promises kept. Yeah, man, those are such cool discoveries. I think, maybe you have an opinion about this too, but it seems like, getting back to the idea that, if you were going to find an X, these fish kind of move around or whatever, but when you find productive water or a productive spot, there's sort of an X mentality, I think, on good spots, because they will recharge. If you catch a few fish out of a spot or you wear some fish out on a weekend or whatever, calibrating how good a spot is or how good it can be, if it'll recharge and you can go back and recreate it in some way, shape, or form, I feel like that's huge value, right, on a spot. I mean, if you wear a spot out and it doesn't recharge, it's probably not, maybe you just kind of caught them fleeting that day or whatever, or you're close, but you're not on it yet, kind of a thing. And identifying those little things, I don't know. I just think that those are just cool topics, cool stories to hear for sure.
For sure. And a lot of times, Taylor, we're targeting crappies, or I want to catch big bluegills. But as and we've seen it time after time after time, a fishy area has fish. If you're in an area and you're not catching anything, there's a reason there isn't fish there. But when you stumble onto that little spot, you might not have your intended target only there. You might be catching pike and bass and a walleye, and you might have tulipy moving through or anything, or perch. But fishy waters seem to attract all sorts of fish. The old 10% of 10% of the water holds 90% of the fish. I find to be very true. Fertile areas just seem to hold a number of fish.
I think that's if you could prove that in some scientific way, you'd be a rich man. But I think that just having those types of, just incorporating that into your mentality and your attitude. So like when you do start marking signs of life, just let it give you that optimism to just be more focused and be spot on, because you're getting close. You're sniffing close, and then just dialing it in. But yeah, you incorporating that camera and all that stuff, that is super, super nuancey, good advice, man. Cool topics for you. Anything about some of the stuff you're going to go after this year that you feel like is maybe a little bit unique? I mean, you talk about, how did you end your open water season as far as, is everything going to, you feel like the bites and the patterns are going to shape up pretty decent, or is there anything, this year that you feel like you're going to anticipate or keep a sharp eye out for as far as the patterns go?
I think you're going to see the technology continue to evolve, and you're going to see people getting very efficient at targeting specific fish. If you look at how some of the tournaments went this year and some of the weights, especially in the catch photo release tournaments, guys were able to really fine tune their presentation and their ability to locate specific fish. And I think as people refine this technology, including into the winter, you're going to see people that are able to target specific large fish that they would have never been able to before. By actually watching that fish's mood, watching how that fish reacts to a certain bait, see if a certain bait spooks it, or if it doesn't spook it yet, it's not aggressive yet, maybe trying different techniques. But I really saw that this year during open water, where I saw some bag limits, where a two-day tournament typically takes 34, 36 pounds to win it. There were guys this year that were hitting 70 and 60 pounds on a two-day tournament because they were able to specifically target larger fish. And I think you're going to see that more and more, even into the ice realm. Now, as far as me personally, I think it's shaping up for me to be a fairly typical season where, I'm a heck of a walleye angler in the month of December, and then again, right at late ice. But other than that, I spend most of the time chasing panfish because I just can't figure out those darn walleyes. And so for me, it's going to be a typical year.
Right on, man. And that's a good thing. That's a compliment to the area, because there's some good fishing around there. So a typical year gives a guy a lot to look forward to, for sure. Yeah, man, that's really, really good stuff. I mean, for you, you know, you've been up on red, so you've kind of wet your whistle a little bit, but we're still chomping at the bit for ice season to really blow up. You know, as far as your gear and preparation, how are you sitting? I mean, you got a lot of stuff rigged up. I know you kind of subtly mentioned that ribbon leech flutter spoon. That's a new bait from Clam. I mean, you got some new stuff rigged up this year. I mean, what do you kind of got tied on right now that you know is going to be incorporated into your kind of some of your first drops when you get out there and you're looking for some of those big crappies and bluegills?
For sure. Well, for me, I didn't have any walleye rods set up as of Monday, and I got the call saying, "You want to come up?" And I got to spend some time with John Crane, the tackle director or the tackle producer of a lot of the cool tackle that Clam puts out. And so I said, "Yep, what should we do?" And it was, you know, the leech ribbon or the ribbon leech flutter spoon and the Tikka minnows were loaded. And for me, as far as my panfish gear, I am a huge fan of bigger baits. So I use a lot of the Drop Jig XL. I use a lot of the Mackie Minnow XL. Big baits seem to get me the biggest crappies, and I think that they have a great profile. So I definitely have those hooked up. I'm also excited about the new Tikka minnow in the 16th ounce, where I can actually, you know, it's going to be a much smaller bait, and I think that it's going to provide a great motion, and the panfish are going to devour that bait. And so they're already rigged. I've got some spoons and some, you know, my Jason Mitchell rattle and blade spoon is probably my go-to spoon for trying to entice those fish out of the weeds, or even getting them out in those basins when I start making some noise. And so for me, those are kind of my go-to, and I'm just looking forward to getting out there and putting a smackdown on them, because it's coming.
Yeah, man, and I'm sure I asked you this before, but I haven't had you on in a little while, so I'm going to ask it again. You know, like your progression, you know, I mean, because this is pretty common knowledge, right? Like you get on a school of fish, or over the course of the day, you're going to experience some fish that are biting hot and heavy, and you're going to experience a few marks that are gonna take a little bit more finesse. Do you kind of have a progression where you kind of maybe you leave your confidence spoon bait on or whatever your tungsten on, and you kind of manipulate your cadence more? Or do you like to have three or four rods on the ready when you're going through your progression of, okay, that fish took a look at this one, I'm going to reel it up and I'm going to give them something different? I mean, what's kind of your progression of that from aggressive to finesse?
You know, I have a great example of that. Yesterday on red, of course, you know what it's like when you've got everything wrapped up and you just need one more fish to close it out.
Yeah.
And I had great success on that ribbon leech flutter spoon in the Wonder Bread color. It was a quarter ounce, a bigger bait. And, you know, it's got such a crazy motion that a lot of times when you jig it, it'll actually leave your flasher, and it takes, you know, 5-6 seconds before it swings back down, because that bait goes so far outside your cone. When you're fishing 12-13 feet of water, you've only got, you know, you're only looking about 3 feet down is all that you're seeing. And that bait moves much more than 3 feet off to the side. Well, yesterday we needed just that one last fish, and I thought, okay, well, I'm using this bait, and I had a couple of fish come in and they'd start just kind of sitting there. And after probably an hour of marking a few fish that wouldn't go, I finally said, that's it. We need one more. I need Old Reliable. And I went back, I grabbed the gold and pink Jason Mitchell rattling blade spoon with the feathered treble, the same bait that I was fortunate to whack some giant walleyes up on Tobin Lake. I tied that same bait on, and my first drop, I stuck a 23-inch walleye that was enough to round out the show. I don't know what it was, but I have so much confidence in that bait that when the going gets tough and it's time to, you know, I needed something to produce. And I think a lot of it was probably I just had confidence in it. I know how to work that bait. I know it's a big, heavy bait. It's going to stay in my sight line on that Vexilar going straight down. I can feel it. And that feathered treble, for whatever reason, seems to be just the right attractant. And, you know, so that's really what I'll do. If I need confidence, I'm going to go with what I want. If I want to try new things and maybe see what these fish want, yep, I'm going to play around with a spoon or maybe a jig or, you know, even a blade type bait or a swim bait. But Yeah, I do definitely have my favorites that if we need to pull out all the stops, we're going to go with this one, and this one's going to do it for me.
Yeah, there's sort of like a, like you said, like there's sort of like a confidence, like psyche to the whole decision-making process. It's like, you know, there has to be sort of a balance. Like at the end of the day, if I, you know, if I had to grind out a specific bite, you know, I'm always going to feel better wrapping it up that night if I knew I threw a few new things at them and tried a few new things that just kind of lets you know that, you know, you're not stuck in a rut. But that at the same time, if you didn't throw old reliable at them at least once, like, what were you really doing out there? You know, it's like, did you really bring your A game that day? So it's like, you know, like having that sort of like a balance and just kind of knowing where you stand on some of that stuff, I think is, it helps you make those decisions a little bit quicker in those moments, which can produce some fish too. But at the same time, it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of funny to think about.
Sure. And, you know, I always tell people, and this is something that a lot of people, I think it's important to hear and it's tough to do, is the best time to try a new lure or to try different things is when you're on fish and you know you can, you caught 10 crappies, 10 bluegills, whatever it was. But now's the time to let's take this favorite lure off and let's try something new. You know, maybe upsize, maybe downsize, maybe try something that has a totally different profile, maybe try a new color, maybe try a different plastic. When you know that there are fish here that are active, that's when I challenge you to make yourself a better angler and now see what they won't bite on. See, you know, hey, will this work or will that work? And once you, you know, maybe drop something down that they don't want anything to do with, you can try to figure out why, or, you know, now why are they biting this and not this? Well, look at this one looks more like a shrimp, or this one looks more like a minnow, or whatever the case may be. And sometimes, you know, that's when you actually get into something that, holy cow, now I'm catching bigger fish, or now I'm not catching fish. But that's the time to me to really experiment is when you're having a successful day.
Yeah, dude, that is such an excellent, excellent point, man. Like if everybody, anybody that listens this far into the show, if that's the one thing that they take away, dude, that is such a great talking point that will never get tired. And just, it's so easy to forget when you're out there, you know, and you're on a good bite because you're sitting there and you're enjoying it. But you gotta realize if you're the type of fisherman that wants to level up at any point in time, that is a premier opportunity when the going is good, and just being prepared to get after it and having those next things on the ready. And for you, when you are trying new stuff, does it really just kind of boil down to new baits and new cadences, or are you the type of guy that will, you know, change your line? Do you try to get away with bigger line with bigger baits and really, you know, kind of, you know, shoot the bazookas at them, that type of deal? Or, do you stay pretty, are you pretty stay in a lane when it comes to, you know, a little 3-pound test on a spoolie reel? I mean, just how diverse do you get with your whole setups?
You know, I probably don't monkey around with my line or reels. You know, I typically run mono spinning rods or spinning reels, and that's my arsenal. That, I mean, I'm a one trick pony when it comes to that, but I like to play around with plastics and size. And so a great example was when my kids were really little, they'd go to bed about 8 o'clock, and I had a buddy, we kept a fish house or out just 2 miles from the house. And we'd go down, we'd meet there every night about 8:15 after he got his kids to bed. And we'd go catch crappies. And it got to the point where we could go down and catch, you know, 40, 50 crappies every single night. We had a blast. It was just kind of what we did. But then we started saying, you know, okay, well, we know we can catch them with this. And we ended up playing with colors and different sizes. And I ended up finding that we were catching much bigger fish going to a black plastic. And a motor oil color. I never thought of using black at night, but it was truly, you know, I'm a guy that says you can use any color plastic as long as you want, as long as it's white. And I use my white plastics and I have good luck, but by taking the time to, you know, adjust and change things, well, we ended up using much bigger baits with black plastics and would catch the much bigger fish. And for whatever reason, that pattern has held to this day.
Yeah, man. That's like, I mean, If you look back on your career, have you always kind of had that kind of open-mindedness in terms of like trying something new, you know, during a good bite? Or, I mean, you know, I mean, because I feel like everybody's wrestling with their own experience level and like, you know, just kind of like, you know, being brave enough, like you say, to like try something new in a good situation when the going gets good, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, but man, like when you realize how much potential is out there, just that one time when you know, you had a few, you know, you had a few beers and somebody made a joke about using black at night. Next thing you know, it's like challenge accepted. I'm throwing black on, ha ha ha. And then bang, big fish, bang, big fish. Like, I mean, has that just kind of like always been easy for you?
You know, no, I think it more with the, once you got into using a Vexlar, once you started doing that, you know, back in college, we didn't even, Vexlars were brand new and nobody had them. So, I mean, it was, you go crappie fishing, you set your bobber 6 feet off one line and 12 feet off with the other and try to, I mean, that's what you do. You put a bear hook and a minnow down and a jig and a minnow down and you see which one gets bit first and then you move the other line to that. I think a lot of the willing to experiment came as I got older, as I wasn't that angry at the fish anymore. I didn't have to go out and catch a ton of fish to feel like my night was a success. There was a time when if I didn't get a limit of fish, that was a ruined day. Or if I didn't shoot my limit of ducks or pheasants or deer or whatever it was, it was awful. And I think it's a maturity level. Now, on that exact same note and in the same breath, I can tell you there are times when trying new things isn't going to work or doesn't work. I took my dad and brother out with your friend Jason Durham this summer, and my dad's a bass fisherman by nature, and I think I can catch bass. Well, we get out in the boat, and Durham says, "All right, well, we're catching smallies, and this is how we're going to do it." And he sets up my son with a rod, and he sits back, and my dad says, "Well, I'm going to throw plastic," and I said, "Well, I'm going to throw this crank," and we start fishing and trying different things. And now Durham has a fish, and then my son has a fish, and then my son has another fish. Finally, on his third smallmouth, my dad and I were both like, okay, let's just go with what's going to work here. We should have listened to you in the first place, and tied on the exact same thing as my son, and we started catching fish just like crazy. So it doesn't always work out. But in those times that it does, it's pretty rewarding.
But yeah, but there's reward in that. To an extent, you know, if you're kind of like that silver lining, if you can keep your chin up on a tough day, man, you're going to learn that stuff too. And just, you know, solidifying what, you know, what Durham was preaching from the boat landing, you know, like, this is how we're going to do it. You know, if you guys would have caught him, you know, like, you know, hindsight or whatever, like, you know, that's always 20/20, but man, you guys just trying those baits, just like in an ice fishing situation, and you're going to try some new things in a certain situation, you know, there's going to be some takeaways, the times that you get burnt too, man. I mean, it's just not nearly as colorful and as much fun to brag about, you know, when you get home or whatever, but, and, there's just so much opportunity to level up. When you get that adventurous spirit, and you know, the lows will be low, but the highs will be high. There's just something to that, man. Anything else along that lines of like gear or setup or style? You know, I was kind of peeping again, man. Trading some photos when you were up on Red, and you're cooking a little bit of soup in the corner of the tent. I mean, man, that's, you know, you're not exactly fishing outside, running and gunning. I mean, any new fun little pieces of gear, anything kind of cool?
You know, and again, maybe it's an age thing, but on Tuesday when we got up to Red, it was blowing, you know, up to 30 miles an hour, and it was 14 below zero. We have the gear, we can hop around, but it sure was a lot more comfortable right inside that shack. And so, rather than, you know, when we're out there, we're trying to get, you know, as much content as we can. And I thought, well, I've got this new Mr. Buddy Flex system, and it's got the cooker attachment. So we brought up some soup and set up the Jason Mitchell Thermal X and flopped it over. And indeed, when we were fishing, I threw a pot of soup on. And let me tell you, come noon, it was a welcome treat to have that hot soup. And I'll definitely be using that cooker a ton this year, because super simple. Boiled some water and threw the shore lunch soup mix in, and we had hot soup on the ice. The next day, same thing. We just boiled up some brats. And so that flex cooker is definitely going to be a pretty cool thing to have. We had fun with that. I've got, this new suit this year that I tried for the first year is the Edge X suit. And if you haven't tried one yet, Taylor, it's going to make filming that much more enjoyable. It's got a fuzzy little fleece inside to it, very comfortable, super flexible, and it ranks right now as my favorite suit that I've ever worn from Clam because of the flexibility and the warmth of it. It's solid.
And, I think that stuff, as entertaining as it is to get a gear review on some stuff, there's a lot to be said for, like, if you can find it in your budget or if you're looking at the way your style of fishing, if you can incorporate some of those creature comforts into, you'll be more effective on the ice and, if it's feasible and it's in your budget. I think that stuff is, it's just as valuable as it is entertaining to talk about. But yeah, man, well, I appreciate the time and, Yeah. But any socials or anything like that you like to throw around, do it. Otherwise, thanks again, and we'll sign her off.
Perfect. Keep me posted, and we'll be in touch.
All right, Tony. Have a good one. Good luck on the ice, man.
Thanks, Taylor. See ya.